Kayla Corbett. I'm the founder of the Operation Child Care Project.
What inspired you to create the Operation Child Care Project?
It was first kind of my own journey in the military. When I realized that my career would be completely dependent on my access to child care, it was not an isolated incident. After I'd been in a few years, hadn't even had children yet when I realized it. And then after I did, it was very much confirmed, and I could see it on everybody else's face. And it was then that we learned it's not just employment. It is everything. It is food insecurity. It is housing access. It is mental health. It is chronic debt, retention, enlistment. It impacts everything. And at the time, there was just no one really talking about it. So I decided, why not me? You know, I couldn't work anyway because I didn't have access to childcare. And having just gone through a pretty tough mental space myself with a child alone, I thought, I have some time and some privilege. So I started tackling it. That's what led us to where we are today. So now we do case management for families, military and veteran who need childcare access for whatever reason, and we collect data on what childcare access means.
How does childcare just help a family's confidence level?
Oh, I mean, childcare is autonomy. Childcare has historically been thought of as something that's nice to have, kind of a luxury. What we have learned over the last few years is that this generation is very different than the 1980s, when maybe childcare was more of a, well, if you have it, then great. It's really more than confidence. It's the ability to be a human, to be a person yourself, to do the things that inspire you, the things that keep you healthy. What we saw in our survey in particular is that when it came to the postpartum screenings for military spouses, they either didn't get the screening at all to see if they were dealing with anything mental health wise, depression, anxiety, or if they did get the screening, they couldn't even act on it. So if they got the screening and it was positive that, you know, there's something that they needed to take care of mental health wise, they didn't have the ability to do that because they didn't have childcare. So they feel very isolated, unsupported, you know, pigeonholed where they are. And that is a very difficult place to thrive.
What does being a mother mean to you?
Oh, goodness. I feel like, honestly, that changes every year, right? Early on, I thought being a mother was sacrificing every piece of myself. That's what made me a good mother. And that's pretty common, especially in the military and veteran realm, where it's like a sense of selflessness. You will see that also in parents. Over the years, what I've realized is that being a good mother is demonstrating that everyone has autonomy. I have likes and interests, they have likes and interests, and my job is to keep them healthy and happy, and it's up to them to then take that and run with it. So less about myself, less of what am I getting from this, and more about setting them up for success.
Can you tell me a little bit about your own military journey?
Yes. So I did not grow up around military at all. My entire education on military was commercials that would come on public television. And it wasn't until I met my spouse while I was in graduate school that I got like an inkling that maybe the commercials weren't entirely accurate. But I was finishing grad school, was not super focused on what he was doing at the time. He had a very regular schedule. And so it really wasn't until we got married and then a few years later went to our first duty station, which was overseas, that I realized what I thought military life was like and then what it actually was like is just two dramatically different things. I like to say that they have the best PR. because what is sold to the public on, you get so much, you know, support and the amazing opportunities and everyone is happy and look at the resources that we have. And then you get in and you're like, I would like my resources, please. But your resources are on a 6-month wait list. Your support will be at your next duty station. You know, we're just too small of an installation for that. And that makes it a very, very difficult transition. And that is very much what I experienced coming into the military realm, is that what I thought it would be, my expectation, was just not matching up with the actual experience.
What has the feedback been for the nonprofit?
Yeah, the feedback has been wonderful. It has been very busy. You know, we started out, we're just about to be a year old as an official 501c3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. While I have been doing this for about 11 years, the official tax status didn't start until May of last year. And we were originally seeing around 10 families a month. Close to the end of 2023, we're around 30-something families a month. And then now we're getting closer to 50 to 60 families a month. And that is with zero advertising. We do not advertise in any way, shape, or form. It is word of mouth. And it is, they need it. Everyone who comes in says, I don't understand what's happening. I feel alone. I have asked these questions and I've gotten no answers. We cannot sustain this. And they've just been internally grateful, which I am too. We have some amazing volunteers that hopefully one day will just be paid staff. But at the time, you know, they're doing some amazing work with what they have. And I'm very proud of my community. They have done wonders with what they have.
What do you do to help your own mental health?
Whew, Michael. I ask for help. I learned after the birth of my first child that it is absolutely the squeaky wheel that will get the grease. I had to fight really hard to see anybody at the military treatment facility that we were currently stationed at that time. I tried to take it on myself for a really long time. I thought I could just get through it. Millions and millions of people have done it before me. Mothers, they have given birth and they've gotten through it. So how can I not get through it? I'm smart. I'm capable. And I waited far longer than I should have. And that has been my lesson time and again. Because once I did get help, it was just exponentially easier. So it's a story that I tell other people. When I did go in for assistance, I was given a 10-day wait, which was really hard because at the time I wasn't entirely sure I'd make it 10 days. And so when those 10 days were up and I did get in for my appointment and they told me that it was an accidental scheduling, that they accidentally scheduled me for the following year. And so I needed to schedule another appointment, but as soon as they had was like 12 days out from that, I said no. I said, I'm not leaving. I stood there with my newborn and I said, I won't leave. Someone has to see me. And that has kind of been the approach that I've taken with my mental health moving forward, is I ask for help. I build a team. I have a team around me right now. I have reminders built into my calendar to prioritize myself and breaks. It's very easy to lose yourself when you are in nonprofit work, especially case management work. So a reminder that I can help no one if I am not taking care of myself first.
Where do you want to see the nonprofit in the next 3 to 5 years?
Ideally, unnecessary. But I don't know if we're going to see that in 3 to 5 years. I find it unlikely that I'll see that in 3 to 5 years. What I would like to see from the nonprofit is that it has succeeded in ensuring that family voices are at the table where decisions are being made. We see in every state and in every installation and in every branch that family voices have been removed from the decision-making process. They're removed from the feedback process. If they are consulted, the families that are consulted are the ones who did succeed, who were able to get access, who are very happy with the process. When you speak to families, they will tell you exactly what's wrong. They'll tell you exactly what they need. You just have to ask, and then you have to listen when they respond. And so in 3 to 5 years, what I would love to see is that as we are raising up the voices of these families, as we're offering this pulse check of this is what they're saying and seeing, that they're listening, that they turn to the Operation Child Care Project and they say, hey, if we did this project, if we did this pilot, if we changed this policy, how would that impact families? What would we see as a result of that? And really take that feedback into consideration, because we are simply just a megaphone. I just take what they say, I collate it into some data, I grab some quotes from it, and then I've been very transparent about it. I put it on my website, I put it on my newsletters. I truly believe that it is through this transparency of listening to the families that we're going to see some real change here. Maybe not in 3 to 5 years, but hopefully within the next decade.
How can people reach out and learn more?
Yeah. So our website, we're currently starting to ramp up our social media. As I said, we haven't advertised, so we've never really focused much energy into that. So currently our Facebook, the Operation Child Care Project, is starting to ramp up some. Our website is a great place if they want to learn more, occproject.org. And then if they need help, that's also a wonderful location. We have a contact form there where they can reach out anytime. It pushes them right into our case management. And I want to be clear that this is for issues big and small. You know, we have some people who are pregnant and they say, what am I going to do? I don't want to have to quit. Can you help me find care in my area? And then we have some people who say, I've spent $10,000 on care that was supposed to be reimbursed. I don't know what to do. I can't afford my house anymore. So we are big and small issues. Both are very much welcome and both have tracks within our system.
Yeah. What would you say to any families that need help?
The squeaky wheel. I mean, it really is just that same system. There's this misconception that it is our junior families only that are struggling, that it is our junior enlisted, it is our junior officers that have lots of children, and those are the ones who are having trouble. When we look at my case management, the vast majority of them are 02 to 04. We rarely get enlisted, and it is a shame situation. It is my enlisted families are more likely to assume that they are wrong, that they did something incorrect, and that since they are incorrect, they're not going to go out and broadcast that they're incorrect. Whereas my officer families, they're more likely to think, wait a minute, that's not how this is supposed to work. And then they reach out to us for assistance through the process. So when I hear families say that, like, they don't need it or somebody else needs it, give it to them, it's way worse for them, I can make this work, there's just no reason. You know, there are resources, there's money, there's people. So be the squeaky wheel. And if you don't feel like you can be the squeaky wheel because of your position, or you're not sure about any kind of retaliation, repercussions, whatever it might be, then let me be the squeaky wheel, because I'm not employed by anyone other than myself. So I have no issue being the squeaky wheel for you.